And that's Pays d'Haïti by Tambou Liberté, and you're listening to Lambicall on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and streaming live on WBAI.org. And by some estimates, there is about $20 billion worth of gold in Haiti's mountains. In the past decade, foreign mining companies have invested tens of millions of dollars exploring for gold, copper, silver, and other metals in Haiti's north. U.S., Canadian, and Australian mining companies, often hidden behind Haitian subsidiaries or partners, hold prospection, research, and exploitation permits that combined cover over 1,200 square miles, nearly 11% of Haiti's landmass. Haiti's last parliament did not renew a new mining law, effectively putting mining on hold, but that may change shortly when a bill awaiting a vote since July goes before Haiti's current parliament in January. The country's highly right-wing and corrupt legislature and executive came to power in very controversial and anemic elections in 2015 and 2016. Some fear they are likely to greenlight gold mining in Haiti, which would spell disaster for Haiti's environment and people. With us to talk about this burning issue, although she has a bad cold, is Elie Happel, one of the principal authors of a December 2015 report entitled Bien Compter Mal Calculé, Count Well, Calculate Badly, Human Rights and Environmental Risks of Gold Mining in Haiti. It was published by New York University Law School's Global Justice Clinic, where Elie works, and the Haiti Justice Initiative, an umbrella organization for a variety of ongoing projects at the University of California at Hastings. Elie Happel, welcome to Lambicall.
Hi, Kim. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Elie, first, can you tell us about what companies have been exploring for gold in Haiti, where, and what they've found so far?
Sure. So I'll first say that what I can share about what companies have found in Haiti is, in fact, quite limited, because among the problems that we have noted since the mining industry, really, or since I should say companies began exploring back around 2008, 2009, is that there's a general just lack of transparency around company activity, and so I am well positioned to tell you what the limited information that we have. So first, the biggest American mining company or gold mining company, I should say, is called Newmont Mining Corporation, and they have previously held over 50 permits in Haiti and have conducted extensive exploration activity, for the most part in the rural northwest areas of the country, but also in the central plateau and in the Artibonite. Newmont, their permits have now expired, but the Haitian government, it seems, has made it clear that if in fact this mining law that you said is now before parliament, if it is passed, that Newmont can recommence their work. And you know, my understanding is from the perspective of other companies, from the perspective of investors, the presence of a mining company of the stature of Newmont really justifies an interest in gold mining in Haiti. And I think another important point just for listeners is that the Pueblo Viejo mine, which is in the Dominican Republic, is one of the 10 biggest gold-producing mines in the world. And so there is, in fact, you know, pretty strong evidence that suggests that there may be significant amounts of gold and other metals in Haiti. And in addition to Newmont, there are a couple small companies. There is a Florida-based company called VCS Mining that recently sold 70% of its holding to an Australian company called 3D, and they hold one of the three exploitation permits in Haiti. And in order to hold an exploitation permit, Haitian law requires that the company conduct a feasibility study and conduct environmental impact assessments. But again, those are not available, neither through the company nor through the Office of Mines and Energy.
And just to clarify, Ellie, exploitation means actual mining.
Yeah, so right, that's a good point. So the current law in Haiti sets up four stages of mining. So there are four types of permits. It's first a prospection permit, which is kind of early stage exploration, and then a research permit, which enables a company to conduct more systemic drilling. And then the third permit is an exploitation permit, which permits a company to, in fact, build a mine. And the last permit is a concession permit, which really just permits the company to continue to operate. And part of the urgency of this moment, I mean, really, there are two things. It's first that a mining law that companies have made clear would unlock the mining sector in Haiti is sitting before Parliament today. And second, that there are already three exploitation permits that the government granted in December of 2012, which do, in fact, you know, even under the current mining law, allow companies to proceed. In material released by the Australian company 3D, they have said that they want to begin operating in the next couple years. I am not well positioned to assess the potential validity of that statement. You know, 3D is a very small, and it appears somewhat underfinanced company, and to build a mine requires a lot of money. But it is nonetheless, you know, it's concerning that there are certain ingredients in place that will push the sector forward, and yet, again, just to emphasize, the information that's in the public domain is quite limited.
And why would they want to bluff just to get their grips on the locations they've identified?
Well, and when you say bluff, what?
Well, exactly? What I mean is, you think they might not actually have the capital to start operations, but why would they posture as if they do, or have?
Yeah,
they?
I think that's a very good question. I don't know, but I think it's possible that in order to attract investment, the companies involved need to emphasize, you know, what they have at their advantage, and perhaps talk as though what is perhaps not likely to happen, they in fact could make happen. But I mean, the reality of the VCS 3D partnership is that it's two very small companies. And again, I mean, they hold a very important and arguably valuable permit in Haiti, and yet they are quite small operators in comparison with Newmont, that, you know, I would imagine would not have any financial obstacles to overcome if they, in fact, obtained such a permit. There's also a Haitian company called SOMI that holds two additional exploitation permits in the Northeast Department. And they previously operated in partnership with a Canadian company, and that Canadian company has, as far as we know, backed out. But again, I mean, I think the key response to the question of what do we know about the companies operating in Haiti is an insufficient and troublingly small amount of information.
Mm-hmm. We know very little.
Yeah. Ellie, do you know anything about how the bidding process was conducted? Was it an open process? Do we have any idea why these companies and not others?
Yeah, that is also a good question. And the answer, again, goes back to a lack of transparency. So in short, no. When the exploitation permits were granted in 2012, a senator who sat on the commission that is charged with overseeing the Office of Mines and Energy told us that he learned about the granting of these three exploitation permits on the radio. So even a key member of parliament who has an oversight duty was uncertain that those permits had been granted. And the permits are, I mean, this is slightly complicated, but I think important. the exploitation permits under mining law today in Haiti, they are the fruits of conventions that were signed between the Haitian government and companies. And the conventions require Parliament to approve the convention and ratify the convention. The exploitation permits currently held are the fruits of conventions that were ratified when Parliament was dissolved in 2005. And it remains unclear whether this process, in fact, is legal or illegal. And I definitely have Haitian colleagues who say, you know, we must continue to question the legal validity of these exploitation permits. Because in 2005, when Parliament was dissolved, there was a quote-unquote alternative process to ratify conventions between companies and the government, where a council of ministers signed the convention rather than, or I should say, in the absence of Parliament. And so, you know, if you trace the history of these exploitation permits, there is additional reason to be concerned.
And we're speaking with Ellie Happel, a member of the New York University Law School's Global Justice Clinic and an author of a 2015 report, which you can find online, called Bien Compté, Mal Calculé, Human Rights and Environmental Risks of Gold Mining in Haiti. And, Roger.
Yes, and the reason I was asking the question, Ellie, was because that this kind of agreements between companies and Haiti may hide agreements between other governments and Haiti, and they're not coming up front, because this kind of exploitations could really be a real headlock on the Haitian economy, because those people are talking about billions of dollars of revenues, and if I remember correctly, Haiti would get a few cents. I'm talking about single digit here, a few cents on the dollar. So this is why I'm asking this. This is really done while Haiti was basically under occupation, and there is really no oversight, no Haitian oversight on all this processing.
Yeah, I think that's true. And something that's troubling about the law that's sitting before Parliament today is that the current law requires parliamentary oversight of the mining sector. And of course, as I said, the conventions that were ratified in the absence of Parliament. However, the previous Haitian Parliament, so that finished in 2016, they actually passed a moratorium, or the Senate passed a moratorium that did not become the law, but I think it's fair to say had an influence on chilling the mining sector to some degree. And so the importance of Parliament, or kind of the role that Parliament could play, is clear, and yet the current draft law essentially removes parliamentary oversight from the sector altogether, and in fact creates a wholly new agency, which would be responsible for overseeing the mining sector, and essentially has full autonomy to do so. And so I think, you know, in the context of a government that has not demonstrated any sort of real capacity to check itself and to ensure that people have access to information, it's all the more concerning to think of a new agency that would have full power, essentially, to grant mining permits at will.
Ellie, as I understand it, most of the $20 billion of gold in Haiti's mountains, or supposedly in the mountains, is gold dust, which would require them blowing off the tops of the mountains and then sluicing the rubble with cyanide. Wouldn't this poison Haiti's streams, rivers, groundwater? Hasn't that happened in other countries?
Yes, I think that it is. The contamination of water is the main concern, and many of the social movements in countries where communities live in the shadows of these mines, they have transformed from anti-mining movements really to, you know, water is life, or water is more valuable than gold. And the limited information we have about the quality of the soil in Haiti suggests that there is potential for acid runoff. And so in addition to the toxins that are often used in processing the ore to separate the gold from the rest of the rock.
Which includes cyanide, if I understand well.
So often, yes, cyanide is used in the leaching process, leaching being the moment where, the rest of the material in the rock is separated from the gold. But even absent use of cyanide, an additional concern is what's called toxic mine drainage. And it's a natural process that occurs when there's sulfurs in the subsoil rocks. And the information that we have about the quality of the soil or the quality of the ore, I should say, in Haiti is that, there is a content of sulfur, which means that, this sort of contamination would be very hard to avoid. And I think what's troubling, I mean, two things. You know, first, even in countries that are far more developed than Haiti and that have governments that, have a lot more resources, Canada, the United States, Brazil, there have been disasters and accidents that, have led to a huge loss of access to drinking water. In the, at the end of 2015, there was an accident in Brazil. A tailings dam burst. And so that means that essentially this, the barrier that is supposed to hold in the toxic waste, the wall burst, and over 250,000 people lost access to drinking water. And then, you know, another concern in Haiti is that Haiti is a country where the majority of people in rural areas already do not have access to drinking water. And so to imagine, you know, mining not only has the potential to contaminate water resources, it also uses an exorbitant amount of water. And so to imagine this activity in a country that's already taxed as Haiti is frightening, and at the very least should encourage Haitian people and people who care about Haiti to educate themselves on the issue and demand a basic level of transparency and access to information.
And you're listening to Lombi Call on 99.5 FM WBAI in New York and streaming live on WBAI.org. It's also archived there. And we're speaking with Ellie Hoppel, who is with New York University Law School's Global Justice Clinic, about mining of gold in Haiti and all the dangers that come with that. And she is one of the principal authors of a 2015 report entitled Bien Compté, Mal Calculé. Ellie, we just want to make sure if you can keep going. We know you have a terrible cold and you're sounding fine on our end, but if you can keep it up, our minds are just racing with questions because this is of such huge concern.
Yes, okay. Yes, I appreciate that.
Thanks for sticking with us, Roger.
Yes, I was just making an observation for people who follow the Haitian thing. Haitians have a very negative experience about those companies who go there to exploit the resources. As much as the agricultural resources with hemp and all of that, what they call sisal at a certain point, and with mining proper, like Reynolds Mining, stayed in Haiti around Miragoan and exploited the aluminum ore, bauxite, and they devastated the region, and the colonies of people went there to exploit cut themselves apart from the Haitian community, no interaction at all, no help, no clinic, no school, not even gymnasium, nothing. They constructed nothing and left the land like totally bare.
And scarred.
And scarred. And the same thing has been happening around other areas of Haiti. And this could be a good area where people should start and protest about what it's going to happen. And according to one politician that I know, and it's Jean-Charles Moïse himself, He told the story about when he was a mayor that
in Milo, which is one of the spots where they
exactly
would be.
Mm-hmm. People were coming at night and taking soil away and transporting it, and he was trying to protest, and they came very strongly armed in his office and tried to intimidate him about this. So this is really piracy. This is, you know, highway. I don't know how to term it. Highway robbery, and they've been doing. That's why I'm asking myself now, while we waiting for them to start mining, maybe they already started.
Well, Ellie, you've spent years going around the north of Haiti, looking at various exploration and possible exploitation sites. What did you see?
I mean, first, what we have seen is similar to Roger. What you describe is communities have said that there often was no warning that a company, in fact, held a permit to mine in their area, but they learned that mining was happening because trucks started to arrive, or in some cases, helicopters arrived, and company officials, you know, began digging in their area without any ask of permission. We have learned also through a number of local authorities that often even government representatives at the local level have been excluded from access to information and from these discussions. And so sometimes they have also not been aware that the land in their area is in fact under permit. And, you know, there hasn't, or at least communities have reported that there has not been mining activity really for the past 4 years. You know, company officials have at times appeared in the area, but there hasn't been any drilling. And the sense is that companies are waiting for this new mining law to be passed and to really have the green light to move forward. But, I mean, I definitely think what you see in communities in Haiti is a real, I mean, a sort of shocking just disregard for people who call those places home. And to imagine, you know, a foreigner coming to my block in Brooklyn with machinery and doing as he or she wishes is a radical thought experiment, and yet something that happens frequently in Haiti and only underscores just the degree of injustice, which I think is perpetuated in part based on a real lack of seeing people as human.
Mm-hmm. Ellie, in a number of other countries, we can cite El Salvador, for example, there's recently been legislation banning mining, hasn't there? Is that something that you think is possible to find traction in Haiti? Or tell us a little bit, about El Salvador.
Sure. So in just a couple months ago in the spring, the legislature in El Salvador prohibited metal mining in the entire nation. This is a national prohibition, and it's the first country in the world to do so. So it is a historic ban, and one that I think, you know, importantly, hasn't only been applauded by activists, but has also been applauded by even some people in the development sphere who encourage a sort of careful calculation about whether or not mining is an appropriate activity for a given country. And, you know, the devastation that mining, specifically mining of metals like gold, has caused is clear. Again, you know, not only in developing countries, but also in countries with much more infrastructure and more resources. And essentially what happened in El Salvador is a very effective grassroots movement that convinced their government representatives to prohibit mining. And interestingly, the key arguments that have been used in El Salvador, I think, really apply even more so to Haiti. I mean, first, people in El Salvador said, you know, our country is too environmentally degraded for mining. Haiti is by any measure more degraded than El Salvador. You know, one example is forest cover. Haiti is the most deforested country in the hemisphere. El Salvador, you know, the movement also made clear that the country was too densely populated for mining. You know, most mines, at least any industrial open pit mine, which most likely would be the method of mining in Haiti, they require a massive amount of land. And so it means that you have to displace people who are living in the area where you're mining. And to imagine the a potential open pit mine in Haiti, it would inevitably require the displacement of hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And of course, the question to where and under what conditions should be one that everyone asks. And the people in El Salvador also really emphasize this, the right to water, and that people said, you know, we lack access to sufficient quantities of fresh water. And again, in Haiti, I mean, I think, as I said earlier, you know, less than half of people in rural areas have sufficient access to clean water to drink. I think, again, just to return to the environmental prong of the argument, I mean, Haiti has recently been declared one of the either three or five countries most affected by climate change in the world. And I think, again, you know, we should ask, why is that? And it's not only Haiti's geographic location in the Caribbean, but it's also because the government just completely lacks the capacity to anticipate and to mitigate, you know, not only hurricanes and earthquakes, but also heavy rains. I was in Cap Haitien with colleagues from the Global Justice Clinic just 10 days ago, and, you know, a day of rain in Cap Haitien means that you're wading through knee-high water. Mm-hmm. And so imagining a government that doesn't even dispose of trash, managing the toxic waste that a mine creates, you know, in this environment of now only more heavy rains, potential flooding, I think everyone should take the impacts of mining very seriously. And again, not be too distracted by the financial figures, because I think, as each of you have said, so often the profits are more for the companies than anyone else.
And at a huge percentage more, pennies on the dollar. And in addition, speaking to people in Dominican Republic where there's a gold mine, they say their rivers are running red and blue. I mean, they seem to be completely destroyed, at least the mining area in DR. Ellie, can you give us some website addresses that people can follow your work and that of the Global Justice Clinic?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, people can follow the Global Justice Clinic on Twitter, and it's NYU_GJC.
That's Gulf Juliet Twitter. Charlie.
Mm-hmm. you can also follow me on Twitter at Ellie Happel. And then the Global Justice Clinic.
H-A-P-P-E-L.
E-L. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the clinic website is slightly long, but if people go to chrgj.org, that's the Center for Human Rights and Global Justice, and from that website, they can click on, or I should say you can click on the Global Justice Clinic, but it's chrgj.org. And if anyone has any questions, please feel free to tweet at me, or, you know, feel free to contact Kim and Roger and ask for my contact information.
And
but
we'll
this
put
is
you
an issue I care deeply about, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity to talk about it.
And we look forward to an article by Ellie in Haiti Liberté in the next couple of weeks on this very issue. Again, we've been speaking with Ellie Happel, who has come on and overstayed her time that we had told her, even with a very bad cold. She is with the Global Justice Clinic at NYU Law School, and also an author of the report Bien Compté, Mal Calculé, Human Rights and Environmental Risks of Gold Mining in Haiti. Ellie, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Great. Thank you, Kim, and thank you, Roger.